Welcome to the Institute Journal Podcast. This is a podcast series where we discuss published articles with authors and provide a forum for the open exchange of ideas, information, and solutions. I'm your host, Staff Sergeant Brandon Cox, Senior Editor of the Institute Journal. With us is Chago Zapata, the Managing Editor, and Sergeant First Class is Valdo Akite, the NCIC. Today we discuss the article, Resilience Through Counseling, Empowering Soldiers for Lifelong Success, by authors Sergeant Major Nicholas Beecham and retired Command Sergeant Major Manny Atencio. Before we kick things off, Sergeant Major Beecham, could you please tell us a bit about yourself?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for the invite. So I joined the Army right out of high school in 2000, coming up on just a little over 24 years of service. My recent positions, I was a Brigade Operations Sergeant Major and a Battalion Command Sergeant Major. I applied for the fellowship program here at the Sergeant Major's Academy, went through their fellowship course, graduated with a master's degree from Syracuse University, and I'm currently an instructor in the Department of Command Leadership.
Thank you for joining us. And Mr. Atencio, could you please tell us a little about yourself?
Hey, good morning. My name is Mr. Manny Atencio. I served as the Denver Recruiting Battalion Command Sergeant Major. I served as the Pittsburgh Recruiting Battalion Command Sergeant Major. I served as the 5th Recruiting Brigade Command Sergeant Major and also the Medical Recruiting Brigade Command Sergeant Major. Following those assignments, I attended the first fellowship for the Sergeant Major's Academy at Penn State University, where I got a master's degree in adult education and lifelong learning, and taught in the Department of Command Leadership, also served as the chair and the vice chair. I retired in 2019. When I retired, I went on to become an assistant principal at IDEA Public Schools for 2 years, and realized that I really missed the military. So after those 2 years, I came back. I've been teaching in the Department of Command Leadership and earned an additional master's degree in instructional design. And that's what I've been doing. I served for 31 years and 2 months. It was my total time in service.
Well, thank you for joining us. Your article states that counseling is pivotal in fostering resilience, adaptability, personal growth among soldiers. I think that that's a topic that hits the junior enlisted all the way through the officers. What inspired you both to write about this aspect of military life and its profound impact on soldiers and their careers?
Yeah, so initially we were discussing that, hey, we want to, let's write something for the NCO Journal and let's try to put something together that we both think is a very important aspect of leadership, and also something, we consider was, hey, what's kind of the target audience here? Who do we really want to stress this message to? And we really felt like from even the most junior soldier to the most senior leader, regardless of really who reads it, those individuals in those leadership positions, counseling, it's the bedrock for forming those relationships that are, a lot of times built on trust early on, and by gaining that trust early on through those counseling and building those relationships, you can establish that path for success, lifelong success, not necessarily just the in your career in your military career in general, but overall, just part of developing relationships, setting goals, and establishing that path for success really starts with those first initial interactions through counseling.
Yeah, and then I think I would add to that, this is Mr. Atencio, that we teach a class on power and influence, and you could lead your soldiers through either your position or through using personal power. And we believe that if you lead by using your position only, you'll get compliance, but you won't necessarily get that commitment that you want. So we wanted to focus more on leading through personal influence, establishing trust and credibility, and then getting that commitment from your soldiers. I can remember myself when I was a young leader trying to achieve all the goals that I possibly could. I was very focused on the mission, and maybe not as much early on on my soldiers as I should have been. It was a hard lesson that I learned. Through time, I learned that if you take care of your soldiers, the mission will take care of itself.
Actually, that brings up a question immediately. When you said you'd been in the Army for 31 years and 2 months, our major, Mr. Atencio, can you remember the first time that you were like the one counseling session that really stood out? Can you tell us a story about that, about the first counseling session that stands out in your mind more than any other?
I had a really good leader that I respected and I trusted. And the setting that he established when we went into the counseling, the how competent he was and humble, and then the way that he said that, you know, about taking care of your soldiers. And so just being competent but still being humble, I respected that a lot in him, and the way that he just really took care of everybody in our formation.
What about you, Sergeant Major? What do you recall the first time that the first counseling or significant counseling that you got in your career?
Yeah, absolutely. Matter of fact, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, throughout your career, the NCOs that you remember, those leaders that you remember, are the ones that made you feel good, right? They made you feel good about what you do. They made you feel good about your organization. And myself specifically, I had my very first NCO. I got to Germany. It was my very first duty station. And his name was Sergeant Jeremy Fry. And to this day, I always use him as an example, especially when I was coming up through the ranks as a section leader and a platoon sergeant and a first sergeant. And I talk about, hey, how this NCO made me feel when I first arrived at the unit, when we sat down and did that first initial counseling. And he went through, you know, all the different things within the counseling about the organization, the history of the organization, the mission. And then we followed on in that counseling with, you know, immediately we started setting goals. Hey, you know, in the first 90 days, let's try to focus on this. Let's get you to this point, right? You know, let's get you to a Soldier of the Month board. And then, you know, immediately after that, you know, we were paving the way 24 months into the assignment. And each one of those counselings, we were consistently following up on those goals. You know, were we achieving the objectives to meet the, you know, the goals that we had set? If we weren't meeting those objectives, what were we doing about it? What was going well? What wasn't going well? What were some strengths? What were some weaknesses? And what that did was it just really formed that early relationship that, hey, you know, this NCO, he cares about my performance. He cares that I'm achieving my goals, and he's setting me up for success. And the difference is, you know, when you have an NCO that doesn't do that, these young soldiers, especially, you know, when they first come in, they're still trying to figure the military out. They're still trying to figure a lot of things out. And if you're not establishing some baseline goals early on, then, you know, you're essentially setting them behind their peers, because their peers that are getting good counseling and do have leaders that care are moving on along those benchmarks. They're hitting those objectives. They're hitting their goals. Right. And it's, you know, and it's one of those, it's the takeaway there is, if you receive that early on, then more than likely you're going to continue to counsel that same way yourself as you progress through the ranks.
Yeah, I didn't receive that kind of counseling when I got to my unit. My counseling was a little bit different. And had I had a better counseling, I think I would have probably done a better job myself as a young NCO. I remember I was a young NCO, got moved to a new platoon, and I had four new soldiers I've never seen before, kind of thing. And I had to counsel them, initial counseling. And I don't think I saw the benefit of putting time or investing time in that counseling session until years down the road. But what would you say, I'll start with you, Sergeant Major Beauchamp, what would you say to that young NCO, the newly promoted NCO, that what's in it for them to take the time and actually include the history, include the organizational values and mission and vision? Like, why is that so important to try to gain that commitment from the soldier?
So I'm going to approach this from a, I'm going to answer your question, but maybe from a slightly different approach. So I think that if you are a newly promoted leader and you're going to counsel your soldiers, I think it's important to focus on what motivates them intrinsically. So sometimes as leaders, our goals, what's important to us, we try and force that onto our junior leaders. And those soldiers sometimes don't always have that buy-in. So I think it's important to let them establish their own goals as long as it's in line with the mission, the vision, what the organization is trying to establish. Because if you have four different soldiers, each soldier is going to be motivated in a slightly different things. There's different things that they value. All those things have to be in line with the organization, but I think it's important not to force onto them what you want, but help them to establish their own goals and then have specific measurable ways of tracking it to get them to their end state.
But how do you get them to buy in on it?
Yeah, well, my thing with the question is this. It's like, I'm a new sergeant. I just got moved into a new team. Like, I got to knock out these initial counselings. I'm given a date, like, by the end of the week. Like, what's in it for me to try to get this, put that time and effort when I just have to check the block kind of thing? And I know, we can talk about different things about checking the block NCOs and things like that. But, like, what would you say to that sergeant? Like, look, you need to dedicate some time and put some effort into this because this is going to help you out in the short term and long term kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, we talk about leadership, but a lot of times we don't talk about followership. So, when you're counseling these new soldiers as a brand new NCO, brand new sergeant, that young corporal, right? The same effort that you expect from your followers, your soldiers, those subordinates, you have to approach these counselings with the same effort into the counseling, putting the time in, right? So, what you're gaining from that is when they see you putting the time and the effort and showing them that you care and you're not just checking the block, right? The outcome is you're going to get better performance. You're going to get more soldiers that are committed to not only you, but the organization and trying to motivate them. A lot of times discussing the history of the organization, what the organization has accomplished in the past. And what you're doing is you're just trying to instill a sense of pride in the individual, a sense of pride in the mission and a sense of pride in the organization. When you have soldiers that have more pride in the organization, that builds on motivation, and you're going to get at the end of the day, you're going to get better committed, better followership out of your soldiers.
So this is Mr. Atencio. To answer that question, I think it's a very simple answer. If you don't invest the time, you're going to have soldiers that are compliant. What that means is they're going to do things because they have to, not necessarily because they're committed. If soldiers are doing things because they have to, probably not going to have creativity. You're probably not going to have critical thinking. You're probably not going to have a lot of teamwork,
initiative.
But I would tell that young sergeant, it is going to take a commitment to counsel your soldiers. It is going to take some of your time. It is going to take an investment. But the benefit to you is that people will be doing things because they want to, not because they have to. And if you have soldiers that are doing things because they want to, then you will have that creativity. You will have that critical thinking.
It's funny though, that if you do it right and you set a good example, then you're going to have somebody like Sergeant Major Beecham who remembers this young NCO who counseled him all those years ago, and he still uses those lessons today and takes care of his soldiers because of that example that this young NCO set for him. It's funny how, that you set an example and maybe it might take effect for maybe one out of every, 10 or 20 soldiers that you lead, but that one person, it makes all the difference in the world.
To what you're speaking, I think whatever the leadership focuses as an emphasis, that will be an emphasis to all the soldiers. So, for example, we teach MR Master Recruiter or Master Resiliency training here. And I've asked people that are Master Resiliency trainers, what's the number one thing that makes your program effective or not effective? And the number one thing feedback that I get is that, are the leaders present? Is the Sergeant Major there? Is the commander there? Are they participating? You know, I think as a, you have to set the expectations. And like you say, setting the example is probably number one thing. So if you as a leader are not making it a priority, and the people below you certainly are not, and they're not going to value it.
Oh, I love that. That's to me, I like distilling that into like a sentence or so. And the, what I'm getting from it is, you know, put the effort in that you want to kind of get out of your soldiers. I really love that, because that's kind of, it boils it down to you want your soldiers to perform, then you need to perform, kind of thing.
Yeah, the bottom line is, you know, we would all like to hit the easy button and think that we don't have to be active participants, that we don't have to, as a leader, we have to make a commitment ourselves. We have to be willing to invest some of our time pouring into our soldiers so that they can grow and learn and develop.
I'm trying to imagine, because I can't remember who that was, Sergeant Major, that you served in the recruiting. I think that was you, Sergeant Major Atencio. But how was, yes, how was those, how were those counselings with dealing with, you know, having a hard time hitting missions with your soldiers, with your NCOs out there? It's a tough mission, and I'm just trying to think back if there's something memorable about those counselings or how much more difficult it was, because your article talks about having to do this through different types of environments and how difficult that is. So,
yeah, so I'll share one example with you is I used to run new recruiter boards. So at the 3-month mark, we would see how the soldiers were doing, see if they were going to stay in recruiting, they were going to go back. And all these soldiers, you know, they come in, sergeants, staff sergeants, some of them sergeant first class. They've been highly successful in their MOSs, you know, MPs, aviators, infantrymen. They spent time in their MOSs. They've been successful. Now they come into recruiting and it's something totally new to them. So even the very basics of the job, they don't understand it. So in the beginning, there's some frustration and they think that they can't do it. And initially, they all want to go back to their MOSs. But then, you know, when we do our counseling and we tell them, these young people, they want to make something out of their lives. And a lot of them are struggling. You know, some of them come from single parent homes. Some don't have any direction. And these kids just want an opportunity. And so, you know, it ends up, if you believe in the Army and everything that it stands for, then it's a good reason to do the recruiting. So I think a lot of it is building confidence, empowering them, showing them, teaching them how they can, you know, not just saying you did a good job, but tell them the behaviors behind why they did a good job. If they struggle with something, not just telling them you did it wrong, but actually showing them, taking the time to show them how they can correct it and make it better.
You know, a lot of these young NCOs, it's a lot, you know, they'll use the excuse, hey, you know, we're just so busy, I didn't get time to get around to that. But you have to make, you know, you have to make the effort to make the time. That's what's really going to, you know, be the difference maker in that organization. And it's also going to foster that that environment for growth. In the article, we talk about building resilience. A lot of that resilience is built by knowing that, hey, I have leaders that are invested in my growth, invested in my performance. They want to see that I'm getting better every day. And I mean, those outcomes are just going to, they just outweigh the knots, you know, if you don't do it.
You said something important there. You talk about time. Not having enough time. I think that if you want to get the best value out of your soldiers that are committed to your organization, you have to put in your time and, you know, listen to them, make sure that you understand their interests, because that way you know how to help them succeed at work. right? So if they're very worried about something at home, or you know, they have an interest in doing this, you can help them get that because you're listening to them. You're taking that time to talk to them. This is just Sergeant Cox saying it, but I mean, the best leaders I ever had, I mean, yeah, we have monthly counselings, we have event-oriented counselings, performance counselings, right? And that's all good. But I think that the best form of counseling comes, you know, before PT. It comes at lunch. It comes after work. It comes on the weekends. That's the best time because that's when you create that touch point to talk to that soldier to actually find out what's going on.
I will share with you all that in my 31-year career, I came across a lot of really smart people. And the smartest people in the organizations were not always the most successful. The most successful people that I found in organizations are those that knew how to build relationships, build teams, communicate with their soldiers, be approachable, allow their soldiers to come to them with their problems. Those were the people that I found to be the most successful in my 31-year career, versus somebody who's extremely intelligent, but maybe lacks some emotional intelligence and doesn't make that investment in their soldiers.
Going back to what Sergeant Cox was talking about, though, when it comes to time, that's one of the things that many NCOs don't have a lot of. So I think that's what Sergeant Cox was getting at, is that you have to make the time, regardless of how much, you know, how intense your schedule is, how much is going on. NCOs have to make the time to counsel, to spend those time with that time that they can, or they need to iron out a specific time so that they can do these counseling sessions with their soldiers, regardless of how intense the training cycle is.
Yeah, and sometimes that time doesn't have to be carved to, you know, during 9-to-5 work hours kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, just like Cox said.
Yeah, so I think understanding that, you know, we're 24/7 kind of thing, but understanding that you can find different ways, creative ways to make time to spend time with your soldiers and get to know them.
Absolutely. I mean, you hit it. You find time. You know, you put the same effort in you expect from them, and that's just the, you know, the level of commitment. If you want to build that team, and you have to have that, you know, that constant open communication, that constant, you know, being present with the soldiers. Right, get away from the desk, get away from the, you know, the emails and the technology, and just get down there hands on, have those personal conversations, and being approachable.
You know, I just thought about this. The way I did it back then was during the field. And I really didn't like being in the field all that time. But if I'm looking back at it now, you know, those 2 weeks to 4 weeks out in the field where we ate, chowed, did everything together, right? I'm just looking back now and like saying like how important field time is, being out there training, because it creates those opportunities sometimes.
Let's talk about building trust. I think that's an important point here. When it comes to counseling, we talked about setting an example. We talked about making the time for it. But there's going to be you're going to have soldiers. There's going to be those soldiers that may be difficult, or that have challenges that are either, you know, they have issues at home. They have, you know, issues with any number of things. There might be things that happening in their lives. Talk about trust.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I would say that, you know, trust, it takes time. The first time, you know, there's a realistic expectation. The first time you go in there with your soldier, they get to the organization, they're going to respect you and they're going to respect your position. But in order to build that trust, that's an ongoing process. And that ongoing process, it really does start with the counseling, right? And showing, you know, back again, showing that vested interest in their career, you know, in their day-to-day activities, what's going on in their life. And not every soldier is going to be willingly to open up and talk about a lot of those things. But that's why I said that it's just that day-to-day interactions over time. You know, if you care and you're vested, you're going to build that trust. And, you know, one of the things I would say with the military right now is a lot of young soldiers are leaving the military or, you know, leaving earlier because those early relationships and that trust wasn't built early on. And I think a big part of retaining our soldiers for future in the military is building those relationships, building the trust in the organization, building the trust in the team, and, you know, building that sense of purpose for it to continue to serve.
Yeah, so for me, I think Sergeant Major Beecham saying, trust isn't built in a day. The day that you arrive to the unit will have some credibility because of your position, but your actions that you display on a daily basis will determine how much trust you have. And I think a lot of it comes down to the culture and the climate that you're trying to set. Every organization that we go into, we fall in on the culture. Those cultures are deeply rooted. There's some traditions that have been in place for a long period of time. But we, as leaders, we want to go in and set up a positive climate.
I know there's another section here, fostering an environment for growth. I want to kind of skip over that and actually go down to there's a section where you talked about developing resilient and capable soldiers. You said that giving soldiers resilience guidance also helps them be self-aware and better able to recognize negative thought patterns. How do you give soldiers resilience guidance?
Well, I think it really starts with, when we talk about self-awareness, you start with those strengths and weaknesses. So you have to have candid conversations. You have to have give candid feedback. Hey, this is what you're doing well. These are the areas you can improve, right? But instead of just saying, hey, these are the areas you need to improve, well, let's talk about how you can improve, right? Because when they walk out of a counseling session, if you just tell them, hey, this is what you're great at, this is what you're not great at, however, you didn't get, peel the onion back and had a discussion about these are the areas that we need to work on, right? These are the areas that you need to put a little more time and effort into, but then give them a plan or give them goals and objectives on how to get after those, deficiencies in those areas. And I think when you instill that confidence in the soldier, right, you're giving them guidance, you're counseling them, you're helping them establish a plan, you're building that self-confidence, that's going to build a more resilient soldier because they know they have the tools and the resources necessary to get better. And they have their leadership behind them, making sure that they're successful.
So moving to a story is there's a podcast I was listening to, and they were talking about you got to have a tribe. So in this tribe, three or four people that you can count on, that if something's really going wrong, you can call them and they'll help you. Maybe you're not doing the right thing, somebody that'll keep you in check. So I think part of that self-awareness also is that we all have blind spots. So there's probably things that we're doing that we're not even aware of. But when you're counseling your soldiers, maybe you could talk to them about establishing their tribe, because none of us can get along this life on our own. We all need at least one person that we can count on. And if you have a tribe, help you with your checks and balances, I think that's very helpful.
The resilience support system you were talking about in your article. So that's your tribe.
Yeah, having that support structure is so monumental to success. I mean, whether it's, your spouse that kind of pushes you or a friend or a past leader.
Mentors.
Yeah. Somebody who you can check in on and be like, they say, hey, how you been? What you been up to? And you'd be like, well, I could be doing better or whatever. I did this or that. They'd be like, well, you know what you got to do. Somebody who's kind of is still keeping you in check.
Sometimes it's hard to make that call. You know what you're going to hear. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know what you're going to hear.
But I think when you go into counseling, you want them to be your only resource. You don't want them to only look up to you. You want them to start developing resources, maybe some external relationships. Like you talked about, maybe you can lean on your spouse sometimes. Maybe you have two or three friends in this unit. Maybe there's two or three friends from another unit. Maybe there's people that are higher ranking you that have been successful you can go to for advice. So when you say building a tribe, that network, developing relationships, getting to know people so that you can be successful.
Well, I think that's a good a good point to say that, you know, a new soldier, like especially an, you know, E1 through 3, they don't even have a tribe. So you are their tribe now. So.
Yeah. And I'll share one more story with you. When I was a brigade command sergeant major, I worked with General Dingle, who just recently retired Surgeon General, but he was our brigade commander at that time. And I had been doing recruiting like 17 to 21-year-old kids off the street. And now in this new assignment, I was going into medical recruiting. And in medical recruiting, we had to recruit doctors, nurses, all the very different. And when I arrived to the unit, General Dingle was like, I got you. He said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to the Pentagon. Then we're going to go to the Surgeon General's office. And I'm going to introduce you to all the right people. We walked in the Pentagon. And it was like I was with the rock star. Everybody was coming up to him. Hey, sir, where you been? How you doing? They were hugging each other. And then we left the Pentagon. We went to the Surgeon General's office. We were General Schumacher. You know, had a cup of coffee, very good conversation. But the point here is that I could tell that he had a lot of relationships. And so when he needed something, there was people that he could reach out to.
You know, when I hear you guys talking about resilience and how do you build that, I think one of the biggest things that I took away from that is you kind of have to get down to the, you know, in resilience training, they talk about the icebergs, but it's, you know, you can name it in many different ways, but you kind of have to get to the root cause and really identify those root weaknesses in somebody. And sometimes it's going to be hard, you know, to point out something like, hey, you regularly think this way, you really downplay some of your attributes, or you're very egotistical. You know what I mean? Like pointing some of these flaws out in somebody is difficult, but I think it is important, and I think that's how you build some resilience, right? Like especially if you're struggling to meet numbers or you're struggling to make a ruck march or something like that. You know what I mean? Having those candid conversations with a soldier is really the best way to build that resilience. But I just want to hear from you all, you know, what has been your experience in having those tough conversations with soldiers?
Unfortunately, you have to have them, because if you don't have them, then you're not bringing up the opportunity to, you know, kind of peel the onion back on some of those issues. And some soldiers may not, like, you know, they may not readily be ready to open up about some things. Maybe there's some, they've had some trauma in the past or something in their upbringing, or could be, you know, something cultural that we can't see. But, you know, just having the conversation kind of opens the door to, you know, if there's other issues that need to be, you know, looked at or looked into, then, you know, that we have so many resources available. And I think that's a great opportunity to, especially for the young soldier, is to really, you know, talk to them about all the different resources available, all the different programs that we have to help with, you know, different things that maybe they may be struggling with or suffering, or, you know, could be something in the within their household. But I think as far as, you know, the day-to-day resilience just within the organization, especially for a new young soldier, is I think it goes back to, you know, as a leader, just building the team around you, right? The stronger your team is, the more individuals within that organization that those soldiers can lean on, right? Because they know, you know, we could call it the tribe or the team, whatever have you. But just knowing they have somebody they can talk to, someone they can lean on. But at the end of the day, the conversation really starts with that first line leader in those counselings.
Yeah, I think that when a soldier is not behaving appropriately, an easy assumption to make is that they're bad soldiers. And we ask ourselves, what's wrong with this soldier? What's going on? But if you take the time to really ask them what's going on in their personal life, having any issues, a lot of times there's something that's going on in their personal life that is preventing them from being productive. If you can figure out what that is and work through it, they're going to be a lot more successful. And then going back to what one of you was talking about with the resiliency and the, you know, the icebergs, We all have activating events throughout our entire career. Events, positive and negative, are going to happen. We can't control that. But those activating events are triggering our thoughts. And our thoughts are going down into the way that we react, our emotions and our reactions. So if there's some system, some thoughts that are always getting in the way, give them some tools and resources to help them work through those issues.
Yeah, that brings up a question that I had when I was reading on resiliency about self-regulation techniques. You know, you talked about, you know, leaders can teach their soldiers to manage impulses and emotions. You know, what can you give an example of that?
Yeah, so I think a lot of times in general, we have a negativity bias. So, for example, let's say Sergeant Major Beecham tells a soldier they need to come and speak to him. When he tells them they need to come speak to him, they're probably already assuming that they did something wrong. But it could be that he just wants to tell them they did a good job at PT this morning. So number one is I think that there is a negativity bias that soldiers have in helping them to work through that negative bias. I think a lot of times soldiers catastrophize. So when they're catastrophizing, you know, their thinking is circling, or you have a scatter shot where they're thinking a whole bunch of disconnected things. And the goal is to get them away from catastrophizing and to do some contingency planning. I think when things go wrong, soldiers tend to spiral with negative thoughts. And the thing is to get them to kind of like slow down a little bit. Let's think this through. Let's come up with a plan to work through this, some contingency planning versus just catastrophizing.
Yeah, I think a big part of that is, you know, just that effective communication. When soldiers are maybe emotionally stressed or got those negative thoughts, it's really that leader that needs to step in and kind of bring them back down, whether that's, you know, through some MRT skills, maybe, you know, hunt the good stuff, you know, what's the good, and focus on the good to eliminate some of those negative thoughts. Or a lot of times, just depending on what the situation is, like, you know, just put it in perspective, right? Bring them back down, get them out of those catastrophizing thoughts, you know, those spiraling emotions. You know, you communicate effectively what's going on and put things into perspective. I think you can eliminate a lot of those, you know, emotional distresses and negative thoughts behind some of these young soldiers. Because you got to remember, they're young, they're still figuring things out, and they don't. Well, there's a lot of unknown sometimes, and there's a lot of, you know, as a leader, we have to provide that expectation management. And again, that goes through, you know, if you got a strong team and you've built trust within your team and you've built those relationships, soldiers are going to, at the same time, they're going to become more resilient, right?
Yeah, so to summarize what we've been saying, I think it's to fight that negativity bias, to remain realistic, to identify what's controllable, maintain hope, and then to let them know that we have confidence in them.
This sounds to me like it's something that, I mean, most of your article deals with formal counseling. You know, we schedule it, here it is. But something like this, dealing with these kind of resiliency type counseling sessions, is more of an informal thing where you take it on the spot as the opportunity presents.
Yeah, you got to be ready with those skills, and I think this is where a lot of NCOs can do a little bit better of understanding these skills and learning these skills and practicing these skills.
Yeah. So, to what the two of you are saying, it's one thing to teach somebody something, but it's another thing to operationalize it and live it. If you go in there and you teach a soldier how to remain optimistic, how to fight that negativity bias, your job is not done. That's just the beginning. You're giving that cognitive process to identify what it is. But the real learning takes place in the application, is to operationalize it. The soldiers know if you, as a leader, are you leading these skills? When something stresses us out as leaders, do we throw a tantrum? Do we get mad at everybody? Or do we practice self-regulation ourselves? And so you have to operationalize it and you have to actually live it.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And I would even add that young leaders need to understand that, you know, young soldiers, they're going to mess up. They're going to fail. Right. But how we build them up from those failures and those setbacks is really what's building that resiliency and establishing, you know, that bedrock for that lifelong success, right? If they just, you know, if a soldier messes up or they fail at something and we just beat them down, or, you know, tell them how bad they were without, you know, giving them the confidence to overcome whatever the setback was or whatever the failure was, then, you know, we're essentially just becoming part of the problem versus helping the problem.
Yeah, I think in my 31-year career, almost all of the learning that happened for me was through my trial and error and my mistakes. I learned far more from my mistakes than from those things that I got right on the first time.
What kind of final recommendations or words of advice do you have for our listeners out there?
For me, I think it's important that as a leader, you need to establish a positive culture and a positive climate. You need to lead through commitment, not compliance. You want soldiers to do things because they want to, not because they have to. If you can get to a point where you build your team that is committed by spending time with them, by making that investment with them, and it may not be from 9 to 5, you may have to invest some extra time, but it'll really pay off in the long run because the result will be your unit will be more creative. You'll get more critical thinking. You'll get better problem solvers. You won't have to micromanage everything. Soldiers will come up with solutions on their own, and they won't be afraid to come up with those solutions. And overall, the organization will be successful.
Yeah, my message is it's pretty simple. It's, you know, at the beginning, I talked about, you know, Sergeant Fry, my first leader in the counseling we had. Just, you know, I would ask you as a leader, think about what legacy do you want to leave with your soldiers, right? How do you want them to feel and think about you when you move on to your next organization? What impact do you want to instill on that soldier? And I think that impact and that legacy starts with how the time and effort you put in to their counseling, coaching, and mentoring towards their success in their career.
I'd like to say one thing. I know that Sergeant Cox was about to lean forward to say something, but I want to say something about my two NCOs here that I have with me. Is that I think one of the things, like during the initial counseling, we just got a new soldier, and during initial counseling, they paid a lot of attention to detail. It wasn't just, you know, just basic stuff. They were going through the young soldier's LES, and they found an issue. And that issue has been resolved in a very favorable way here recently. And it was, I think that it's important that NCOs devote or pay attention to detail during that initial counseling. Don't take things for granted. You know, look at that at the young soldier as a whole person with everything that involves, and not just little pieces that are maybe just applied to the job or whatever. But I just wanted to bring that up and give them a little recognition because they're outstanding and they did some amazing stuff. And our young soldier is much better because of that attention to detail and the effort that they put into the counselings that they give her and also the support they provided to resolve that issue, that pay issue that they found.
Absolutely. And that, you know, that individual will always remember that. That's something they'll take with them when they're in that position and it's time to counsel and take care of issues. One thing I always tell people is at the end of the day, what people remember the most is how you made them feel. Whether it was good or bad, but they're going to remember how you made them feel.
Thank you, Sergeant Majors, for joining us. And thank you to our audience. Remember to put your knowledge to the page, submit articles, and get published with the NCO Journal. Don't forget to check out our webpage and follow us on social media. We'll catch you next time on the NCO Journal podcast.